Hi, welcome to the Holistic Matters podcast. I'm John Trope, the host for the podcast. We want to spend time talking about holistic health matters and making sure that people understand how they can be the you that nature intended. We're at the Florida Chiropractic Association National Conference. It's the world's largest conference in chiropractic, and I'm pleased this afternoon to be sitting with Dr. Christopher Bump, who's a practicing chiropractor in the greater New York, Metro New Jersey area. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thanks, John, for having me here. It's a pleasure.
So this is a great annual event for us to be at. It's a chance to meet a lot of peers and other practitioners and better understand what this whole sector and profession is all about. But let's start there. So tell us a little bit about how you became interested in chiropractic and a little bit about how, in particular, you integrated nutrition into your practice as you got started.
Well, it's a good question, John, and one that I think about in terms of my upbringing through educational tracking. As I, in my undergraduate studies, I had this very eclectic exposure to psychology and photography and biology. My early interest was actually veterinarian medicine. But through my studies, I just expanded my interest. But all along the way, being a child of the 60s, I was constantly challenging and questioning. And in the early years of my life, I was looking at diet and nutrition as it affected my health and others around me. So I had this interest in reading Adele Davis back in the late 60s and early 70s. And then that took me to reading Bernard McFadden and a number of other individuals who were early pioneers in the realm of nutrition.
Yeah, interesting. So was there one influencer early in your career that first got you interested in what I like to describe these days as the adjunctive care approach, where you take chiropractic and enhance it by the use of nutrition?
Well, I should say that my interest in chiropractic actually started because it is a natural healing modality. And given my eclectic background and my interest in challenging tradition, i.e. medical allopathic, I didn't have interest in that regard, but I did have interest in trying to understand how the body worked from a very holistic, I use the word holographic perspective. I wanted to know how things worked. And I knew that just adjusting individuals was not going to be enough. I needed to know why they needed adjustments and what were the different health conditions that patients would be coming in with that caused the need for adjustments. And so that caused me to start looking at the different metabolic aspects that started to...
And where did you get your training in chiropractic? And did they have curricula in nutrition at that time?
Actually, I went to Palmer College out in Davenport, Iowa. Before going there in 1979, I already had this model in mind. Knowing that I could become a physician, a chiropractic physician, where I could be working on bodies, patients, their bodies, but also to have the opportunity to start looking at their lifestyles and diet. And that was even before I went into school. So a little bit of nutritional training I had at Palmer was certainly not enough to contribute to a thorough, deep understanding of how nutrition related to metabolic conditions. And of course, that was back in the early 80s. But that's when I found the work of Royal Lee, and I was absolutely blown away by his early work, where he had, I think it was called the Therapeutic Handbook, which he had all these conditions and how he treated them nutritionally. And that was really the spearhead that opened my awareness that there was ways to work with patients metabolically that would augment the chiropractic care I was offering.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're really one of the, I would describe it as one of the early adapters and advocates of functional nutrition in chiropractic, to the point where you're clearly one of the recognized leaders of functional nutrition and functional medicine, particularly within the chiropractic community. How did you become interested in the functional aspect? Is it just an extension of what you just described for us? Were there other insights that really motivated you to adapt it into your practice?
As I mentioned, I am one that likes to understand how things work. I like to know mechanisms. So I call myself a dot connector. So I needed to know the dot connecting. I had the privilege of meeting a Dr. Jeff Bland in the early 90s, late 80s, and listening to him speak and explain metabolic processes and pathways from a nutritional point of view absolutely blew me away. Here was a man that understood what I wanted to understand as it related to nutrition. So I heard Jeff speak, and if you've ever heard Jeff speak, you know that sometimes it's difficult to follow. So it prompted me to further my education. So I went to Columbia University and obtained a master's in clinical nutrition.
Fantastic. Let's talk about the application of nutrition in patient care in general, and how nutrition can effectively be used as a co-therapy to chiropractic.
Sure.
So do you have clinical protocols that you would routinely follow, where you know that for certain issues that you're seeing in patients, it's always therapeutically bundled with nutrition?
Yeah, that's a very loaded question, John, because it can take us down very many paths. And I don't per se follow protocol per se, because I want to treat each individual as an individual and try to assess their bio-nutrient needs. With that said, there are some very common patterns that I see in the clinical practice, especially as it relates to the chiropractic arena, that is the structural integrity component of my practice. And I'll give you an example of that. When I assess patients from a structural point of view, I'm not just looking at spinal misalignments, I'm looking at the soft tissue component of their expression. So I'll do an extensive muscle connective tissue evaluation along the structure, combining that with a patient's lifestyle, how much coffee do they drink, what kind of refined foods they eat, how much sugar do they take, do they miss meals, do they get sleep. And factoring in all these different lifestyle components, then I may make it an assessment that they need magnesium, as an example. And I can do that empirically, simply because something like magnesium is going to help every single major metabolic pathway that someone comes in. There are a number of other different components of someone's presentation where I may look deeper. So instead of just doing an empirical recommendation of something like magnesium, if they're carrying a little extra weight, they're complaining like of chronic inflammation, I will then suggest, let's do a lab workup and let's look at some markers related to insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, inflammatory markers, and then tie that into lifestyle, and it's a win-win situation.
So one of the recent national nutrition surveys that came out, you know, suggests that somewhere in the neighborhood of up to 80% of the American population suffers from some undernutrition or even deficiencies in magnesium. You were just talking about that. So tell us a little bit more about what you're seeing clinically with some of these deficiencies and how you treat that and how you address that, you know, in your typical
visits with patients. It's an interesting conundrum, because in one respect, patients are coming in, as you astutely mentioned, in nutritional deficient states, but yet they're severely overcalorized. So it's a double whammy. So, and what I mean by overcalorized is that, I mean, just look at the portions of foods that are served in restaurants.
Right.
We're taught and encouraged to overconsume. It's typically refined processed foods that people are eating. When we eat refined processed foods, that depletes us of essential nutrients, whether it's magnesium, calcium, essential vitamins like B and C, which are water soluble. Patients coming in with these mix of different types of clinical presentations will reflect it all of the above. And I'll give you an example. I could go into great detail about magnesium, but something as simple as essential fatty acids. So what do I mean by essential fatty acids? Essential fats are EPA, DHA. What do they derive from? Well, we know that they're derived primarily from marine lipids, fish oils, krill oils, but they're also plentiful in hemp as well. And well, what is the nutritional value of this? Well, if you were to do a PubMed, that is a literature search on essential fats, you would see that essential fats are implicated in just about every single major disease process in our, because they're all inflammatory. So how are essential fats related to the inflammatory cascade. Well, they're the foundation for both pro-inflammatory prostaglandins and anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. So depending on the fatty acid mix. That coupled with, for instance, cellular membrane. So cellular membrane is absolutely dependent on essential fat. So this is where my brain goes in thinking, so I'll ask a patient, so what kind of fat you getting in your diet? And typically it's a mix of hydrogenated and saturated fats.
Right.
Yeah.
So a lot of the problems that patients will come to you and present have an underlying influence from poor dietary practices, perhaps even poor lifestyles. So is that kind of the starting point for most of the work that you do with your patients?
Yeah. Any patient that comes into my office, I'll do a fairly detailed assessment of their lifestyle factors, including how they eat, when they eat, how they, what they eat. I'll look at their sleep patterns, their stress patterns. There's an interesting question I ask every patient, John. I ask them, what do you do for play? What do you do for recreation? And you'd be surprised at how frequently patients look at me quizzically, like, what are you talking about, having play? Who has time for that? But yet there are essential components of our human experience that we don't give enough regard to.
Yeah. So as regards the use of magnesium and the deficiencies, you know, there's a lot of good science that's out there that talks about the importance of magnesium to manage central nervous system function, in particular stress and anxiety. You described earlier already the importance of magnesium as supportive of metabolic processes.
Yes.
Are both important, or do you see a series of steps where patients need to get a handle on their stress and anxiety before you can work on the other issues, or what's the card and what's the horse here?
Well, that's again the million-dollar question. Because I work in this holographic model, inherent in that workup process is in assessing lifestyle, behavioral changes are paramount to a good response to any intervention. So when I think of something like magnesium, because it's so ubiquitously deficient and it's so ubiquitously beneficial, so it helps with insulin sensitization, it helps with type 2 diabetes, it's important in energy production, it's important for neurologic relaxation or quieting, it's important for muscle relaxation, it dampens the deeper inflammatory cascade like NF-kappa-B and tumor necrosis factor. It's just amazing. So to benefit, something like magnesium is an easy segue into for patients. Yeah. I don't hesitate.
So when it comes to the selection of magnesium, how do you consider what form? You know, there's five or six different salt forms that are out there, and how do you decide?
It's a problem because any magnesium so far, I would say first and foremost, magnesium should come through food. Mm. Why? Well, first off, the richest sources of magnesium are, of course, those with dark green leafy. Almonds tend to be very high magnesium, buckwheat high in magnesium. So there's foods that we know that are real rich. I prefer a food-based source of magnesium because that's what our body can use. It's already ionized. We don't have to chelate it and have it transported across the intestinal tract. So that's the ideal. Unfortunately, we need to supplement a little bit to augment that. So the forms I'll go to historically have been things like magnesium lactate, magnesium citrate, malate. So there's a number of them.
Let's make the transition into you've been describing really underlying systems and underlying issues and pathways that affect disease states and disease outcome and patient health profiles. Mm-hmm. And that's really the basic philosophy and approach of as described by functional nutrition, functional medicine.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about some of the experiences that you have on functional nutrition. Maybe let's start with the patient. When you first introduced that concept, how do they respond to that? Is it like exciting for them, and now I finally understand it, doctor? Or
well, it depends. I have patients that come in just initially for structural ache and pain, neck pain, headache, muscle tension, lower back, and those patients are not able yet to make the connection between metabolic processes and their ache and pain, especially if they've had previous chiropractic care. And I'll give you a perfect example. A patient comes to mind by the name of Sue who came in to see me with, just as I described, headache, neck pain, upper back pain, lower back pain, a sense of fatigue and tension. And she came in for just adjustments. She just wanted to be adjusted. I said, well, you know, I can work with you and I will, but your problems stem out of your lifestyle that involve how you're eating, how much you're sleeping, how you're handling stress. It's not for lack of chiropractic adjustments. And she said, no, I just want to you to adjust me. So I said, fine, one agreement. And that is if in 4 weeks you don't have a significant and complete reduction in your ache and pain, then you agree to a metabolic workup. And she did. We took her through some structural care twice a week for about 4 weeks. She gained benefit. And then she said, Doc, I still don't feel well. Can we do that metabolic workup? So I did. I did this detailed, actually it's not that detailed. They're basically used common metabolic markers like hemoglobin A1C, fasting insulin, some inflammatory markers, and on and on. And I was able to put together a profile for her to see that if you change your lifestyle here, you're going to see this benefit. So we took her through a significant lifestyle change, changing her diet, got her off of wheat and dairy and some other anagenic foods for a period of a month.
Right.
She lost something like 20 pounds. She had, by the end of the month, she was free of pain and discomfort.
Awesome.
And yeah, it continues to be.
Yeah, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help patients once you give them, you know, the diagnosis and then you prescribe their regimen, even change in their lifestyles? Do you provide supporting tools along the way, either, you know, devices to track, like, you know, Fitbits or online dietary recall or just a call?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. And yes, I'm fortunate to have within my practice a health coach and facilitator who is certified as a health coach, and we work side by side. So, and she is, Dawn is absolutely amazing at facilitating changes, because the truth is patients need support in learning how to make changes.
Yeah.
So I can put in front of them the most incredible diet and lifestyle recommendations, but unless they know how to do those changes, they can't. So often they'll establish a coaching relation with Dawn.
Yeah.
They get phone calls from myself, a follow-up visit.
Awesome, yeah.
And they're tracking tools that I use in terms of symptomatic surveys. We'll redo lab works every 3 months or so, 6 months, depending on. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about trends that you're seeing, you know, both in terms of trends in lifestyles of patients. Are they getting better? Are they getting worse and no change at all? What about the trends of new nutritional insights that lead to new nutritional solutions, regimens that you might introduce? So tell us what your assessments of major trends from patient to nutrition support that's out there.
Well, I have to be honest with you, John. One of the biggest trends I see is Dr. Google.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a problem, because there's so much misinformation that I'm finding the patients are coming in with. But the good news in that is that patients are being self-driven, self-actualized, in their willingness to accept responsibility for their care. So I change the paradigm with them and say, look, I'm not going to tell you what to do. We're going to do it together, meaning that I will be your facilitator. I will be your partner in this transition. And we use all kinds of different tools to do that. You mentioned the wearables. So there's a number of different wearables, you know, not only for just tracking heart rate, but sleep patterns, for instance. I get patients involved with those. The heart rate variability testing is amazing for those that are sympathetic dominant and need to learn to kind of balance their autonomic system.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind, on heart rate variability as a relevant tool, particularly in light of what we were just talking about, about nutrition influencing and stabilizing metabolic processes. So if you look at, say, for example, magnesium or really any other nutritional solution related to a patient you're trying to capture a better balance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic, what do you do for that patient? And specifically, if you're asking them to monitor progress with the heart rate variability. Connect the insights for us and what you're seeing typically, what you can expect to see if you adopt that approach of nutritional support and monitoring the device to watch their improvement.
That can be a whole conversation in and of itself, John, but there are a number of different tools that I'll use to bring awareness. And that's really the first thing I would say, is that a patient needs to understand what their stresses are, how they are reacting to their life demands. More often than not, patients get up in the morning, they're turning the television on, listening to the news, and they're wondering why they're irritable and stressed out all day. It's because they've just listened to all this garbage on the news, and they've become all fear-driven. So bringing awareness to what are the stressors that someone is experiencing. Interesting thing that I've learned through the years is to assess the breathing ability for patients. And during my physical exam, one of the first things I'll do is check their diaphragmatic breathing. And I would say easily 90-95% of patients are breathing what I call upside down. They're breathing with a sympathetically driven type of intercostal breath rather than a nice vagal parasympathetic diaphragmatic breath. So that's, and that becomes an incredible exercise. In the functional neurology arena, they teach about stimulating vagal tone. So using the diaphragm for proper breathing, gargling, singing, taking cold showers are ways to stimulate that. Then with the proper breathing and doing mindful techniques, if I use the heart rate variability in the office, they'll actually see changes start to quiet down. But using something like magnesium, our friend that we've been speaking about, it is so amazing at helping to quiet neural excitation.
Oh, yeah, awesome. What about the recent discussions and insights related to receptors in the body that are so influential? And there are two, you know, major receptor systems that have been recently, if you will, even discovered or identified in the last 15 years. So the first is these specialized compounds, specialized lipid mediators, resolvins,
and then
in parallel and identified almost in the same time period, but a little bit of a laggard, are these cannabinoid system and the role that phytocannabinoids might play. And as we are finding out that the two are interrelated and they have cross links to their influence. And so, you know, the body is, strikes me always as being an orchestra. You want to keep it in balance. You want all the players playing the right notes at the right time. But more and more, we're seeing nutrient solutions targeted at those.
Yeah.
How do you bring all that together as major trends and advancements in nutrition?
It's a bit esoteric. I don't talk to patients about resolvins.
Yeah,
by the way.
Right.
I mean the pathways. I'll explain to them how resolvins work and how important they are. That said, if we look at the resolvin pathways and we look at the endocannabinoids pathways, we're looking at phytonutrients where there are known endocannabinoids in a lot of different foods that we're eating. So we can get the same medicines from different sources. So as long as the patients start eating whole foods, organic, plant-based foods, they're going to start pushing that pathway. When they're getting proper levels of essential fatty acids, they're going to be pushing the resolvin pathways properly. The real issue, I would say, to add to that, is this notion of chronic inflammation and stress response. And this, you know, we throw that word around all the time, oh, we're stressed and we stress this and stress that. But until we really define it as clinicians and understand the process whereby cortisol and adrenaline are stimulating these cytokines, the tumor necrosis factor and interferons, that then stimulate NF-kappa-B, which is a transcription factor that wakens the whole body up into an inflammatory cascade. But knowing that stress response, whether it's an emotional stress, a physical stress, a biological stress, a mental stress, or would I dare say even a spiritual stress, they all manifest down in the same pathway. So looking at the resolvins, for instance, in endocannabinoids, it's understanding that we have to help patients define and address this chronic inflammatory process as well.
Fantastic. Well, it's always great talking to you. It's as inspirational as it is informative, so I appreciate that. But
always my pleasure, John.
I'm always curious. Guys from the Northeast, and especially the metro area, so let's have a little bit of a game here.
Mm-hmm.
You pick one. I'll give you two choices, and you pick one, right?
Yeah, sure.
Mets or Yankees?
Yankees.
Yankees, all right.
Yeah.
Jets or Giants?
Giants.
Giants. Wow.
They usually go together. I don't know why.
So Yankees or Cubs?
Oh, Cubs.
Yeah, how do you feel about the Red Sox?
Okay,
great answer.
You know, that's a bad timing with the Red Sox.
They're
beating up everybody.
Well, anyway, we've been with Dr. Christopher Bump. This has been a Holistic Matters podcast, helping you become the you that nature intended. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure.
This podcast features the song New Day by Lee Rosevere, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you like this podcast, please share with your friends and family. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you next time on Holistic Matters, where we're talking about being the you that nature intended.